Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. This is March 26, 1979, a date that is certain to go into the history books with the entry, Egypt and Israel signed peace treaty after more than 30 years of war. The event takes place on the front lawn of the White House facing Pennsylvania Avenue, and we'll hear about it from Leslie Stahl.
To crown what some are calling Jimmy Carter's peace treaty, the White House is planning a full day of activities, starting with separate meetings in the Oval Office between President Carter and his two guests, Sadat and Begin. The signing itself will take place at 2 p.m. Eastern Time outside on the White House lawn. 1,500 people have been invited to that ceremony. Meanwhile, across the street in Lafayette Park, that many people again, about 1,500, are expected to stage a demonstration against the treaty. There's considerable fear here of an attempt on Sadat's life, so special canine squads will be roaming about, sniffing for bombs and suspicious-looking packages. President Carter, by the way, will sign the treaty himself, but only as a witness, and he'll sign all three versions, the ones in English, Arabic, and Hebrew. Tonight, the White House is throwing a state dinner again on the White House lawn under a huge orange and yellow striped tent. Yesterday in Dallas, the President Carter predicted that today's treaty signing will go down in history as the most significant event of his presidency. Leslie Stahl, CBS News, the White House.
From Jerusalem now, Dan Raviv reports on the way the signing ceremony will be greeted in Israel.
As Begin and Sadat put their names on the peace treaty in Washington, Israelis will be watching on television and listening to their radios, and then they'll go out and celebrate. Public rallies have been planned in the big cities, Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and Haifa, and also in dozens of small towns. On the somber side, school children placed flowers today on the graves of all Israeli soldiers, thousands of whom had died in the five wars against Egypt. Israelis on the street and in coffee houses continue to say they're happy, but the but refers to the feeling that even if relations with Egypt stay peaceful, Israel has plenty of other problems. In the West Bank and Gaza Strip, for instance, Palestinians reject the autonomy they're being offered. Politicians on the West Bank announced this as a day of national mourning, and the general strike they called shut down nearly every place of business, not only in the West Bank, but in East Jerusalem, too. One Arabic newspaper in Jerusalem carries a large headline saying, "A Black Day," with a photo of Yasser Arafat of the Palestine Liberation Organization and an article on the threats he is making. Soldiers and policemen are on alert to prevent any disruption of what the Israeli media enthusiastically call the Day of Peace. Dan Raviv for CBS News, Jerusalem.
Tight security also, but no celebrating in Egypt, where President Sadat's National Democratic Party is appealing to other Arab states to join with Egypt in achieving a general Middle East peace. But Arab League delegates are gathering in Baghdad this morning for a three-day conference called to implement sanctions against Sadat. Hal Walker has details in the Iraqi capital.
Although the conference is at the level of foreign and economic ministers, Jordan's King Hussein has been invited to Baghdad at the same time by Iraq's President Ahmed Hassan al-Bakr. And the chairman of the Palestine Liberation Organization, Yasser Arafat, will reportedly attend the conference. As the meeting approaches, hardline Arab leaders are stepping up their attacks on the Egypt-Israel peace pact. President Bakr told a visiting group here that President Sadat has fallen to the bottom and sold out his country on a mentality based on imperialism and Zionism. The newspapers here are filled with virulent anti-Sadat comments and cartoons. It is expected that the mood of the conference will be set by those who wish to punish the breakaway Arab leader. Hal Walker, CBS News, Baghdad.
Soviet Foreign Minister Gromyko left Damascus for Moscow this morning after 3 days of talks with Syrian officials and PLO leader Arafat. During his visit, Gromyko restated Soviet opposition to the Egyptian-Israeli peace treaty. Members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries are meeting today in Geneva, and Joan Shore reports that they're talking about additional price increases.
Delegates from the 13 oil-producing nations meeting here under tight security seem overwhelmingly in favor of an immediate price increase. This would be over and above the increase scheduled to go into effect April 1st, which was to be the second of four gradual increases planned by OPEC for this year. Some delegates want to raise the price right now to the fourth quarter level, representing a 14.5% increase since December. Others feel the market could absorb an even greater price hike, of 17, 18, or even 20%. The only nation opposed to a price increase is Saudi Arabia, the leading oil producer and a longtime moderate among OPEC members. Saudi oil minister Sheikh Ahmed Zaki Yamani said this morning that his country would resist the move to raise prices, but the Saudi position seems certain to be overruled. Joan Shaw for CBS News, Geneva.
Opposition members of the South African Parliament today commenced a drive to impeach President John Vorster and force the resignation of his government. This move results from the widening scandal over the secret misuse of government money in other countries as well as South Africa to promote support for the government's racial policies. The action is without precedent in South African history. A federal judge in Milwaukee today holds hearings on the government's efforts to prevent publication of a magazine article on how the hydrogen bomb works. CBS News law correspondent Fred Graham is covering the case.
Never before in the history of this country has a federal judge issued an injunction to block a newspaper or magazine on national security grounds from publishing an article. But Judge Robert Warren will be asked to do just that today to stop the Progressive magazine from publishing its now famous article on the secrets of the H-bomb. Judge Warren temporarily restrained publication of the article 2 weeks ago, pending today's hearing, at which the Justice Department must prove its claim that publication of the article would inflict grave and immediate harm to the national security. The magazine argues that its reporter never saw any classified documents, that his main source was Encyclopedia Americana, and that even the government admits that nothing in the article was top secret, only secret. But the Justice Department insists that the article does contain classified atomic secrets that might help a foreign nation make an H-bomb, and the government says that even if the journalist dreamed it up out of his own imagination or deduced it in a flash of inspiration, it's restricted and cannot be disclosed. Fred Graham, CBS News, Milwaukee.
Michelle Marvin is scheduled to make her final witness stand appearance today in her case against Lee Marvin. She is suing the actor for half of his estimated $3 million earnings when they ended their six-year unmarried relationship in 1970. The trial opened January 16th. Judge Arthur Marshall has ordered testimony ended by Wednesday with final oral arguments set for April 10th. The judge indicates he may hand down his ruling a few days afterwards. The American Cancer Society, now meeting at Daytona Beach, Florida, is being told about a new treatment for cancer, making use of a drug known as interferon, which is developed from material inside the human body. Charles Crawford tells us about the project.
Nearly 200 cancer patients are to be treated with the naturally occurring body substance for malignancies including breast and bone marrow cancer, lymphoma, and melanoma. After 3 years, studies in Sweden show 60% of the patients treated with interferon are cancer-free, compared to only 20% of those treated by surgery alone. Dr. Jordan Gutterman, director of the Human Clinical Trials, told the American Cancer Society meeting he is highly optimistic about interferon's ability to fight cancer.
We think it works by, in some way, slowing the growth of cancer cells in a non-toxic way, and somehow the tumor cells eventually die. We still don't know exactly how it works, but certainly a number of studies are trying to determine this. It also boosts or activates or improves the body's immune defenses against malignancy.
Dr. Gutterman says it will take about 18 months before the effectiveness of interferon can be accurately determined, but already he is speculating that someday it may be used routinely both to destroy malignant cells and to prevent the onset of cancer. Charles Crawford, CBS News, Daytona Beach, Florida.
Italian Vice Premier Ugo La Malfa died this morning in Rome at the age of 75, 2 days after suffering a massive stroke. La Malfa was the longtime head of Italy's small Republican Party. Last month, he tried without success to form a government, and just last week, he joined the new minority coalition regime headed by Giulio Andreotti. The United States dollar gained about half a yen today in Tokyo, but weakened generally on the European foreign exchanges. The price of gold advanced more than a dollar an ounce in both London and Zurich.